It's time to navigate through life's kindness, common sense, and a little help from your friends. It's time for Talkin' Shit, the unsolicited podcast with host Jessica Lee Levin, author, speaker, entrepreneur, and purveyor of kindness.
Hi, I'm Jessica Levin, and we are Talkin' Shit on the Unsolicited Podcast. And I'm here with the fabulous Amber Marlowe. Hello. And we are going to talk about all sorts of things. She is one of the most, I'd say, inspiring people I know. And she does a lot of different things, but mostly her real day job is being a photographer. And in addition to that, I think of her as a humanitarian and a part-time activist.
Sure.
I don't know. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Okay, so I'm a wedding photographer. I started primarily specializing in elopements to New York City. Then I branched out into larger weddings, and I've been doing this since 2010, and it's 2018 now, so 8 years. And that's pretty much my day job. I do like other things on the side. I'm the real weddings and styled shoot submissions editor for a magazine called Catalyst Wedco. And that's probably my main side job, where I accept submissions for real weddings from photographers and couples and publish them on our website.
Okay, so you're an entrepreneurial photographer.
Sure, yes. I help a lot of people with their businesses just because I really love the business side of it. And a few photographers are soul photographers where they love the art of it and struggle with the business side of it. And I really love both parts of it. I love being artistic and creative. And I also love working with clients, figuring out solutions for them, sending off contracts, getting them back. And so I find both sides of that business really fun and enjoyable. So I like to help other people with that too.
That's funny. In my business, the one thing that I absolutely hate doing is sending contracts.
Yeah.
That's why I just absolutely hate it. So it's funny to hear somebody say that you love doing that.
Oh yeah. I love getting that signed contract back, which means someone's an official client of mine. And then that really allows me to shift the relationship from being like someone I'm actively courting to working with me to someone who is working with me and is committed to working to me. And that means that now it's time for me to spoil them rotten.
So you have a unique business from the elopement side. How did you get into that?
I started as a family and baby and maternity photographer. Very easy photo shoots to do around the city. And I met somebody who was starting a wedding blog who said, well, maybe you can consider doing small weddings. So I started doing elopements, which is where two people would run off to City Hall or stand under a tree in Central Park and get married with just the two of them. A lot of times I would sign their marriage licenses myself. And that was kind of a fun addition to my family photography, which was still mostly what I did. And what happened was in 2011, New York State got marriage equality. And what that meant for me was that people from all over the United States were coming to New York City to get married. And before the DOMA was shut down in 2013, what they would do is they would land on a Monday, get their marriage license, have their wedding on a Tuesday because you have to wait 24 hours, and spend the rest of the week in New York City because as long as they were standing in New York City, they were legally married. And once they went back to Texas or North Carolina or Kansas or wherever they were from, they were no longer legally married. So I did a lot of Tuesday elopements, and that kind of was my main job for a while. And so people assumed I specialized only in same-sex weddings, but I had no problem shooting elopements for anybody. It was just those were the people who are coming to New York and finding me, seeing a lot of same-sex couples on my website, seeing that they were treated with dignity and respect, and then almost like, yes, of course, I'll work with you. Like, that's not even a question we need to have a conversation about. It's just a given. And I was presenting it that way at a time where either people weren't specifically reaching out to same-sex couples or they'd be like, oh yeah, I guess I would do a same-sex couple. I don't have a problem with that. But it never occurred to me to like explicitly say that or show a same-sex couple explicitly to make sure they knew that they were welcome. So I got a lot of same-sex clients and people would be like, do you do straight weddings? And I'd be like, absolutely. Yes. Please give me all of the weddings. I treat everybody the same. And so I think it was 2012 or 13 that someone asked me to shoot their big wedding with 100 people in an animal sanctuary in Massachusetts. And I said, oh, I don't really do big weddings. And they said, okay. And then they came back maybe a week later and they said, you know, we looked at a lot of other photographers or same-sex couple. We cannot imagine anybody else photographing our wedding except you. Can you please just do it? And I said, yes. And I absolutely loved it. It was a nervous wreck. I hired another person to come work with me who is a more prolific wedding photographer. And the results were beautiful. I had a lot of guidance, of course, on the day of from this person that I had invested in being there with me. But it went great. And I was so filled up at the end of that day that I said, I think I want to do big weddings. So now I've been building my business to do larger and larger weddings as well as elopements. And right now my business is 50-50. I'm looking to transition more into bigger weddings, bigger luxury weddings, but that's where I am right now.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the same-sex couples. And there's a reason why they're attracted to you. And it's not just because they're seeing your website. It has to be something about how you're dealing with them or their experiences talking to other photographers. You must hear a lot of stories from them about maybe being rejected or being treated poorly. Do you want to share some of those stories?
I have had people specifically reach out to me because I make a pretty big point to treat everyone equally. I have not heard too many horror stories of people being treated badly, but I think more when they get to my website as a same-sex couple, they see themselves and not tucked into the archives of my website, but front and center on that front banner. Used to decorate like my different landing pages as well as in my portfolio, they know that they're welcome. And I think that is probably the most powerful thing that I do. In New York City, I don't know anybody who would take a stand against a same-sex couple. If I did, I don't even know how I would react to them. Like, what, why? Yeah, I don't think I've personally met anybody who is bigoted against same-sex couples. And I have a pretty large circle of wedding vendors, including other photographers. But I have had a couple of same-sex couples say to me, we're really grateful that you're showing us and you're showing a diverse mix of same-sex couples, you know, including trans people who are same-sex couples, but might have been considered, you know, opposite gendered. And I ask people what their pronouns are when they reach out to me. So I do try to foster a very welcoming presence right from the get-go to let you know what I'm about and mix that with a lot of, you know, of my own personality, my own love for luxury experiences and stuff like that.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about this. And one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on here is because I've seen just sort of your communication, maybe, I don't want to say change, but maybe evolve really into this, you know, being an advocate for humanity and an advocate for just inclusion and treating everybody with respect. And you're very vocal about it. And the way that you're vocal about it is, I feel, in a way that it is inclusive. And it's different from the way that a lot of people communicate. And I think that's one of the reasons why maybe you've had success not only in your business, but just in attracting people to you as a person, because you are talking about some of these issues that are going on in your world, in the world as a whole, and you're not shying away from them. You're attacking them head on. And as I said, I feel like you have really evolved into a little bit or a lot into a, you know, human rights activist. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
That's interesting, because I don't think that was a conscious choice. I'm delighted that you see that. That makes me really happy. But I don't know that I feel like I'm doing anything particularly noteworthy, I guess, on my own. I am an ethical humanist. That's my worldview. It's not, I wouldn't call it a religion, but it is my worldview, which is, for me, what that means is what is best for the human being. And then we're going to go with that. And that means all human beings. And that means that, yeah, like I treat people who are same sex or transgender or bisexual the same I would treat any other couple. It means I believe Black Lives Matter. It means I don't use slurs. I try to be really conscious of the wording that I use, even if it's a word or a phrase that is pretty common. If anyone ever says that, oh, this hurts me, I try not to use it anymore. I try not to center myself in conversations that have nothing to do with me. But yeah, like I don't know that I do anything noteworthy. I'm sorry, I don't even feel like I have a good answer for that.
I think you do, because you call yourself an ethical humanist, which a lot of people don't even have never even heard that term before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like some people are super into it, and it's like a movement or like there's like the Ethical Society, actually a few blocks away from me here in Park Slope in Brooklyn, and I've never gone. I just try to do what's right for my fellow human beings, and a lot of times that's not comfortable, and a lot of times my own selfish nature trips me up in that pursuit, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of the center of the way I live my life. And I try to use that in my business and in the way I conduct myself interpersonally. And maybe that does make me louder than other people in advocating for human rights. But I honestly often feel like I should be doing more. So thank you.
So one of the things that you posted, and I believe you posted it at the beginning of the summer, was something about, you know, when, you know, it's summertime and it's getting hot, and so people are wearing less clothing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it's bathing suits or shorts, and you posted something about, you know, not judging people, whether, you know, they have too much fat or too much body hair or not enough hair or whatever it is, they're odd shaped. And it was, the way you put it was just, it was so obvious.
Yeah.
And it was so descriptive, because you went there and you described all of the quote unquote bad attributes.
Right. I do remember what you're talking about. And I didn't write that. I just reposted it. It was a friend of mine who had posted it. And it was a couple of things. Cause I think like maybe the more enlightened people in our society know, okay, if someone looks a little chubby in their bathing suit, you're not going to say, hey, you look chubby in that bathing suit. But it went on to say, like, don't point out someone's dark underarms. Don't point out their body hair. Don't point out their self-harm scars. Don't point out, like, all these little things that you might not even know about if you don't have them, because they're not really, like, nobody talks about dark underarms, but it's a thing, and it's a hyperpigmentation that happens to sometimes women who are heavier and or sometimes women of color. And it's like, you don't need to point those out to people. Yeah. And so that, I remember reading that and going, oh, wow, that is a thorough list. And so I reposted it because there were so many things on that list that I never thought of. But yeah, of course, like, in addition to not saying, ugh, why are you wearing those shorts? Don't say, ugh, look at how dark your underarms are. Look at those stripes on your arms from where you cut yourself. Like, so yeah, just be like, I've realized more so in the past few months than any other time in my life, but I've always kind of thought this, 99.9% of people, and I was just saying this at dinner last night, 99% of the people you meet in the world have some deeply lonely center in them. They might have a million friends. They might look like they have everything. They might be on top of the world. They might be rich. They might be beautiful. Or they might be fat and quiet and lonely and shy and sitting in a corner. But everybody has something that makes them feel insecure. Everyone has something that makes them feel lonely. And it's best to just meet people where they are.
Expand upon that, meeting people where they are.
Sure. So, all right. So I have these two friends and they know each other tangentially. And one of them said to me recently, oh yeah, every time I see this girl, I'll call her Emily. Every time I see Emily, like, she's super snotty to me. And I said, do you know Emily is actually incredibly shy and deals with severe depression and like has a hard time speaking up. But Emily is this like model thin, 5'8", beautiful faced person. And so when people see her, they look at her and they go, oh, she probably is not going to be super nice to me. But, you know, I think that, I'm not explaining this very well. I think that like that thing illustrated for me most clearly what it means to meet people where they are, is that like someone may look like they have so much, but they don't want people to not speak to them.
I'm glad you explained that way, because in the conversations that I've been having in all of these episodes, variations of this conversation have been a theme, and maybe not so much specifically about what you're talking about, but very much so about perceptions, and especially with what we see online, you know, and these perfect pictures, or what we perceive to be these perfect pictures of reality that are not the case at all, right? So your friend Emily, right, people believe that she's got this perfect life because she's got the perfect body that you wouldn't make fun of because she doesn't have dark underarms.
Right.
She doesn't have rolls of fat. She has all those things that you wouldn't make fun of. And so people are drawing conclusions that she's happy and that she has a lot of friends and that she wouldn't want to be friends with them for all of these made up reasons. When the truth is, as you're saying, she actually is painfully shy, which may or may not be the cause of the depression, or, you know, chicken and the egg. But for whatever reason, there are these preconceived notions of her, which is, you know, just causing a spiral effect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I pointed that out, you know, and like, not to like chastise my friend who is saying this, because like everyone has like their, oh, I'm not cool enough things to do. And like, maybe her perception was that Emily like viewed her as not cool enough, but I think you miss out on a lot of humanity and a lot of good friendships when you perceive people as too snotty. And I mean, that said, there are snotty people in the world. There was one time I went to a fancy yoga class in Brooklyn, and the woman, I walked in wearing my like weird gray baggy sweatshirt, and this woman looks me up and down and went, hi. And I was like, okay, that's her face. That's probably not about me. That's probably about her day. The woman behind me was thin and blonde and gorgeous and head to toe in Lululemon. And she got the warmest, happiest welcome. And I'm like, oh, you are snotty. But that's still not about me. That's about you perceiving the worthy people and not worthy people. And if you're able to make that judgment call. It was really funny because I'm always like, oh, it's not about me. It's not about me. And it was so about me in this moment. But even then, it wasn't about me. It was about her walking around with like these prejudices of what certain people look like and probably missing out on great friendships, because I think I'm a really great friend to have and I'm a really great person to be nice to, you know? So I don't know, be nice to people.
So I agree. How do you get people to understand that it really was not about you? And yes, it was about what you were wearing, but it wasn't about who you are. And how do you get people to understand that it's other people's baggage and it's all based on their experience?
I don't know. Let me know when you find out, because like, as much as I knew that it was about me and as intellectual as I can be about that situation, like, it still hurt my feelings. Like, I still felt like walking into this yoga class as a size 14 woman in a baggy sweatshirt with a frizzy ponytail that I wasn't good enough. Like, I still had that, oh, I'm not good enough. And like, I'm the most confident person I know, but it still stung. So I don't really know. Just know it's not about you. Just know it. Just trust your friend, Amber. It's not about you. Even when it's about you, it's not about you. And compete with yourself. Like, try to better yourself based on your own metric, you know, and make that metric with love. Don't say, oh, well, I'm going to be the right kind of person as soon as I make X amount of dollars, as soon as I hit X dress size, as soon as I have X number of friends, as soon as I get this degree, then I'm going to be who I want to be. And then I'm going to love myself. Love yourself now. Create your own realistic love-based goals for yourself. And don't worry about anybody else. Surround yourself with people who are going to think you're awesome and fabulous. Cheer yourself on. Find people who will cheer you on. No, everyone is lonely. And yeah, all of which I'm working on myself.
And again, you know, just tying all of this back to a lot of the conversations that I've had with people and, you know, the themes that everybody that I've been talking all have these really great positive attitudes and great outlooks on life. And every single one of them says they're all working on it. You know, everybody says, hi, I'm a hot mess. You know, I had this conversation the other day with somebody who was saying, oh, you know, you've got your shit together and, you know, you're so productive. And I'm like, nope, I am number one hot mess. Like, trust me on this. And, you know, it's not necessarily about a facade, right? Because I admit it, you admit it, all these people, we're not trying to pretend that that life is perfect. We're saying, no. Like, you're perceiving it because that's about you, right?
Right.
You being whoever is listening or watching or looking from the outside. But everyone has shit, right? Yeah. That's the theme. And owning your shit and saying, yep, I got it. I own it. But I choose to be happy. I choose kindness. I choose not to let it get me down. And you said it hurt your feelings, but you still understood that it wasn't about you. And that's a hard balance.
Yeah.
And you're still working on it.
Yes. Ever and always.
Okay. Which is okay.
Yeah.
So what else are you working on in your life that you'd like to share? Anything exciting, interesting?
Those are my two main projects. I did start a side gig helping people with their business officially, which is on shaky ground right now. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do with that. I'm a little overwhelmed because I just went to a photo conference and there's stuff going around in my house. Like, we're putting in new windows. So it's a holding pattern, and I am trying to level up in my photography business. Like I said, my goals for 2019 are to do more luxury weddings, because right now I'm pretty, like, I'm doing like standard Brooklyn, New York City weddings, and I really want to move into the luxury market, because I feel for me, if I'm going to take away a weekend from my family, I want it to be something that is able to pay me a substantial amount. I also feel like going luxury will allow me to create the art that I want to create, and it will allow me to employ people to come work with me at a more affordable price point. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on now. I'll let you know how it goes. Hopefully in a year from now, I will have like my business exactly where I want it. But that's a work in progress. Ever and always a work in progress.
As it always is as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
All right. So the question, you know, the million-dollar question is, you have one single piece of unsolicited advice on any topic in the entire world.
My goodness. I had so many that I was thinking of. And I think I ended up on the one that I had already said, which is make your goals with love. And this was something that I've been struggling with for a while. I have goals for my life, and I have been struggling with, I'm trying to figure out how to put this using wisdom. I have goals for my life and things that I want to accomplish. And I want to accomplish those things from a place of, I love myself, and so therefore I want to be better. And it's hard with certain things. Like, I would like to lose weight, and I struggle with that desire because I don't want it to be, I want to lose weight to look a certain way only, or I want to lose weight to feel good about myself only. It's, I want to lose weight because I don't like the way I currently feel, like when I lay down in bed or when I'm running up the stairs and I can't run up the stairs that easily. And I want to be better at it. And I want to have children, so I want a strong, healthy body for that. And so I have been trying to figure out how to make that goal with love. And I've done it with other things in my life, like have a business, but don't give yourself over to building a business so much that you neglect going out with friends and meditating and reading and watching movies and all of these things. Work hard, but then rest as well. And so I'm trying to figure out how to do that with this new goal that I currently have for myself. And it's currently my biggest struggle, but it's something that I've done successfully before. So I think I'll figure out the answer to it sooner or later and figure out how I can set a weight loss goal for myself surrounded and pierced through with love. And I think that everyone should make goals. So yeah, make goals for yourself with love. Yeah. So that's my big piece of advice. If you're making a goal for yourself, make it with love.
I love it.
Thank you.
If people want to learn more about you, how do they find you?
At Amber Marlowe on Twitter. I'm a big Twitter user still. I will be till they pull Twitter out of my cold dead hands. I know a lot of people aren't on Twitter anymore. I am a huge Twitter user. And then you can follow me on Instagram also at Amber Marlowe. Go to ambermarlowe.com for my website. You can see my photography and email me at amber@ambermarlowe.com. I love hearing from people.
Okay. Well, thank you, Amber, my friend, now everybody's friend.
Yes.
I appreciate it. This was a great conversation. I hope everybody goes and looks up not only your website, but more about ethical humanism, ethical humanity. I think it's a great concept. It's very much about what part of what this podcast is, just really sharing kindness and helping everyone become better humans. So thank you for talking shit on the Unsolicited Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Talking Shit, the Unsolicited Podcast. Remember, everyone has shit. Be a good human.